Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hankst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week by my co-host, Brian.
Hey, now.
Like I'm joined every week.
Yeah, pretty much.
So this is episode 102 of the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and it's about to be week 10. Every week, it just keeps going by so quickly here in the season.
Yeah, it seems like we were just getting things started, and here we are on the second half.
Second half of the season. Obviously, we're in November. This is a very important month in the NFL, November and December, when contenders and pretenders start to separate, and the playoff picture starts making sense. You know, some divisions, of course, are going to be making more sense in terms of the playoffs sooner than others.
Sure.
For example, the AFC North, everything is pretty crazy there right now. That's going to probably take until
take
those
some
last
time to sort out.
Those last two divisional games in Week 17 to figure that one out. Start with a bit of news of the week. Two teams have made quarterback changes. The first being the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're turning away from Mike Glennon, going back to Josh McCown. McCown, of course, injured his thumb in Week 3 and has been sidelined since then. Mike Glennon has been taking over. Glennon himself was the one to break the news, not Lovie Smith, that he would no longer be the starter, though Lovie Smith did say that he still believes that Mike Glennon is the quarterback of the future for the Buccaneers. Future, you know, we've seen that future get started and stalled out both last season and this season. You know, I can't blame them entirely, the Buccaneers organization, for going back to McCown. I mean, McCown wasn't playing well, but neither has Glennon played well. Glennon has completed 57.6% of his passes for 1,417 yards, 10 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and he's taken 16 sacks. McCown hasn't done that much better, but he does have a higher completion percentage of 63.2%, but he has thrown only 2 touchdowns to 4 interceptions with 5 sacks. So obviously they're just going with the guy with a bit more experience. The guy that obviously, you know, is a true Lovie Smith guy in Josh McCown. I just don't see it. To me, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if McCown's the starter or Glennon's
exactly
the
right.
starter. This is a poor team and it's a bad year. And
well, that's the main point. This is, if anything, it's a little bit of scrambling, just to try and get some better feels, I think.
Yeah,
around
and just get their
team.
The guy who they said was going to be the week one starter. He
right.
got hurt. They got to put him back out there, right? I mean, he's technically
guess.
The starter.
I mean, Glennon didn't look good, but he looked, I would say, marginally better than McCown did at the beginning of the year. And
completion percentages aside, yes. I mean, the touchdown interception ratios are clearly better.
Right. That's what the offense looked. We'll just say more capable in Glennon's hands. But even then, it was few and far between when they looked capable. So
yeah, I mean, I guess the good thing you can say about Glennon is that he was developing chemistry with Mike Evans.
Yeah.
So you know, a young quarterback to a young receiver, that's great.
No, I mean, I was a little surprised to hear it. I don't know the details. I'm not in the locker room there, but it seems like if I were in charge of that situation, I would have kept Glennon in just because, you know, yeah, he does look like. Of the two that they have currently, he's got to be the one that you would point towards, quote unquote, quarterback of the future, and it's mainly just because he's younger and you know.
Well, he was drafted to be the quarterback.
He was drafted
of the future.
To be the quarterback. Yeah, well, that's kind of aside of different people, but that aside, it's the fact that he's younger and the offense has looked marginally better in his hands, even though he was struggling. You just kind of. You know, in my mind, you would just roll with him, you know.
Yeah, of course,
see
you just
happens.
Roll with him, especially
because
when you
have deeper issues.
Especially when you have Lovie Smith saying today, you know, that he does fully believe that Glennon is the quarterback of the future there. And so if that's what you believe, and obviously you weren't doing the McCown thing to be a long-term thing anyway, you might as well just keep Glennon in there.
Right.
Hey, the future is now.
If Glennon has any... If there's any truth to he's the quarterback of the future, and there's
if Lovie was telling the truth
if
there.
If Lovie was telling the truth there, And there's no reason to think that he shouldn't, because there isn't any reason to think that Josh McCown's the quarterback of the future there.
No.
Then why
he's
are,
not a quarterback
why are you making
of
this
a
change?
Future anywhere. He's
there's,
Josh McCown. He's
there's
older.
No future to this season. There's no there you know you got to see what you have in your younger guys at this point for that team, you know. They've
Sure.
They're at that point where they just kind of need to begin assessment mode. I mean, obviously you want to play spoiler and still put out your best effort and try to win each week and whatnot, but I don't know. I don't see this as anything much more than a maybe desperate just to get one more win, so that way I don't know they feel a little bit better about themselves.
And then they don't end up in the Marcus Mariota running, and then they can just
then they
not
can really
complicate the
things.
Quarterback
yeah,
situation
exactly.
further. The Houston Texans, they also made a change at quarterback, not because anybody was coming back from injury, but because they decided it is now time to bench Ryan Fitzpatrick. It will be Ryan Mallett taking over for him this week. Fitzpatrick has completed 61.8% of his passes this year for 1,960 yards, 11 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, and has taken 20 sacks. The Fitzpatrick to Mallett thing makes less sense to me even than the switching back to Josh McCown in Tampa Bay, only because Fitzpatrick wasn't playing well, but he was not playing as poorly as Glennon had been, for example. Mm-hmm. And
they're a little bit closer to being in the race there.
Right. You're a little closer to being in the race. Fitzpatrick has, you know, he's been a decent, we'll say decent caretaker quarterback. Obviously, he has more touchdowns than interceptions, so that's always, you know, a good thing. But Ryan Mallett does have a lot of support on that roster. And you know, maybe, you know, they must believe that the change, especially when you've got Bill O'Brien,
who worked with
Ryan Mallett in New England. He knows what he's got there, and he, you know, they must obviously believe that this is going to be a positive shakeup. You know, obviously it didn't look good for the Texans going into this season, not trying to do much more than have Ryan Fitzpatrick be the starter and not kind of go out there and be aggressive to acquire a long-term solution at quarterback. And I'm supposing that they're putting Mallett out there to maybe he can turn into something that is a long-term answer at quarterback for them.
To me, this makes a bit more sense than the Buccaneer shift. And it's mainly because it obviously the play of the, we'll call him the incumbent quarterback, was a little bit better in this situation than in Tampa. So it seems at first blush like it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, why are you switching to Mallett? Fitzpatrick wasn't playing that bad. But I think what this was about is, one, Ryan Mallett is finishing his rookie contract.
Right.
This is the last year. They're marginally in any sort of race for the playoffs.
Very marginally.
Very
marginally.
Very marginally.
Yes.
And they just lost Arian Foster, right?
No, he's okay.
Oh, he's okay? I thought he got hurt for a while.
It's a minor groin, but they're on the bye, so.
Oh, so he might be able to be back after that.
Sure.
Still, they don't have a ton going for him for this season. They have Fitzpatrick. I think he signed through next year. And I think this is a going to be Mallett's test to see if this is someone they want to re-sign and stick with him. And also, again, given that they came into the season with only Fitzpatrick, they moved for Mallett after the season started. Is that correct? I think it was after the beginning of the season that they brought Mallett in. And so that kind of says to me that maybe they had a plan to bring in Mallett. It was Bill O'Brien. He knew Mallett from the past, and he was comfortable, you know, with rolling with Ryan Fitzpatrick out of the gate. He's got plenty of experience as a starter and someone that he figured would be fine to start out. But then when, you know, they weren't crushing it or anything with him, it's, you know, they make a move for Mallett, and then it's taken several weeks to, you know, kind of get Mallett ready for the game. And maybe that's now. There's half the season basically left at this point. It's going to give him a time to prove himself. Prove that he's deserving of a contract. And, you know, maybe that sounds a little too experimental for what actually goes on in the NFL, but
Now you get to evaluative mode, especially if you think that the playoffs are out of reach. Then you can start, you know, evaluating some of the younger players.
And given what we've seen in the landscape of the AFC, Houston, like I said, marginally is probably dressing it up a little too nicely.
Right, especially because there's a division in that conference that could yield three playoff teams when all is said and done here.
True.
Couple other quarterback changes, of course. Nick Foles of the Philadelphia Eagles has a broken collarbone. He's expected to be out about 6 to 8 weeks, so that means it's the Mark Sanchez show starting this week. Sanchez looked pretty good in relief after Foles went out last week, but Sanchez is still Sanchez. I mean, when he's got a clean pocket, he'll mess you up. But if he doesn't have a clean pocket, he's going to mess up. So the main thing is if he's going to have any kind of success taking over for Foles, especially when, you know, the Eagles are right in it for the playoff race, he's got to stay protected, he's got to stay clean, so he can make smart decisions. But I have to say, out of most teams' backup quarterback situation going into this season, having Sanchez, who looked good in the preseason too, having Sanchez behind Foles, I think that's brilliant. I think he's one of the better backup quarterbacks. I mean, he's kind of a limited starter in terms of everything that he brings to the table, but he's spent a lot of years being a starter.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of that powder keg of the New York media. So, you know, this might actually be a positive opportunity for him.
It's a chance for him to prove that maybe he's different than what we remember. You know, it's a different offense.
You got to get out of the Jets if you're gonna see what your real potential is as a quarterback. That's a horrible place to play quarterback right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's just even outside of New York and the media storm there. You know, each team is its own situation. There's 32 different situations going on,
and so
Sanchez in a different situation. You know, maybe. Maybe it could work out better for him. We'll see. You know, we'll see after a team has a full week to prepare their defense for, you know, Sanchez, and see if he looks at least as halfway decent as he did last week when he came in relief. I expect this to be good for from the quick fantasy perspective. I expect this to be good for McCoy owners just because. I can see them leaning more heavily on the run now than they probably were 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's,
it was Foles thrown all over the place.
And that's what the Jets, you know, did in their successful years with Sanchez. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of running, and that, you know, took some of the pressure off of him. But I am curious to see, you know, Sanchez 2.0 in a new location, new team.
Yeah.
A lot of really good weapons to throw to. Because that was the big problem with the Jets, too, is that they've lacked so many weapons over the past few years, the final seasons of his career mm-hmm. there. So you couldn't even tell exactly what you have with Sanchez because the line was kind of crappy. The run game started stalling out. They ran out of weapons. People mm-hmm. were injured. So, you know, this is an all-around better situation. The Eagles' offensive line's getting healthier.
It's doubly interesting for the fact that we're seeing Mark Sanchez in a different situation with more talent around him and all that. But it's also Mark Sanchez in Chip Kelly's offense.
Sure.
You know, and that what all comes with that, you know?
Well, I mean, everybody was sort of wondering about Nick Foles in the Chip Kelly offense
true.
And said, that doesn't seem like a Chip Kelly quarterback. And he had a really excellent 2013 season.
Right. Well, no, that's all I'm saying. Yeah, is that's what makes it extra interesting is because
sure.
it's not Mark Sanchez – with the Dolphins, which is just a different situation with different people around him, with potentially slightly better playmakers or something like
right.
that than the Jets had. But it's in one of the more high-powered offenses in the league and one of the more unique ones, considering Chip Kelly and his whole high tempo and all that stuff that is kind of defiant from a lot of football historical logic, if you will.
Or at least NFL logic.
Well, just the old-school mentality of – you know, ball control and all that. It's possession based, and you know, the more the merrier with possessions. That's what he does there, and it'll be interesting to see how Mark Sanchez can, you know, basically execute that game plan.
Yeah.
And again, especially given a defense having a full week to prepare. So.
Another quarterback injury worth noting, of course, is Tony Romo has two fractured inverse processes, which doesn't even sound like a thing that would be in a body,
no,
but
it
is
doesn't.
In
it
his
sounds
spine.
Like, it sounds like a computer thing.
Transverse process. It might be transverse process. Either way.
Either way, it sounds like a computer thing.
Either way, the Dallas Cowboys take on the Jacksonville Jaguars in London this week. Romo has not yet practiced. And as each day goes by, especially, you know, you got these teams in London and trying to adapt.
Romo doesn't need to practice.
That's true.
Whedon
That's true.
Needs to practice.
Brandon Whedon, if it ends up him starting.
I don't expect Romo to practice at all, even if he does play. Because obviously, if Whedon's going to go, he needs every second of practice that he can get.
Yes.
And Romo needs every second of rest he can get.
Yes.
But
you know,
regardless,
these fractures though in Romo's back, not related to the disc situation that required surgery last year. If you kind of know what the spine looks like, and you've got the little pointy things that stick out, it's the little pointy things that stick out of the spine that's where he has the fracture. So
Ooh.
It's not in the spinal column itself. There's no danger here to his.
But it's more pain management stuff.
It's
right?
pain management,
which he's shown he can do.
Which he's shown that he can do, but obviously, you know,
that obviously means he's still going to be operating sub 100%.
Right. Exactly. And the Jacksonville Jaguars, they have a pretty strong defense, but at the same time, you know, you're in England. You know, you're at Wembley. Don't you want to put on a show for these fans? And so it's obviously a lot more deflating to go to Wembley and see Brandon Whedon instead of Tony Romo. So I'm really curious to see what happens. But right now, Romo has not been practicing. So I am just going to be operating on the assumption until something changes that Brandon Whedon's going to start.
I don't know how much it matters. And obviously, it matters a lot if Romo is good enough to be near 100%. Obviously, that's a huge difference. But
right.
if we have a severely hobbled Romo who's just gutting it out because it's all about pain management and he's going to show us how tough he is, that doesn't mean he can make the throws and it doesn't
that's
mean
true.
He can execute
very true
the same way. And we know that Brandon Whedon has issues making the throws and executing things. So
yeah.
even at 100%. So
yeah, even when completely healthy, he's like 50% of Romo.
Yeah, so basically a 50% Romo versus 100% Whedon, which is probably 50% Romo anyway. And
yeah, so either way, it's
kind of, you know, it's not too much different, I don't think.
No.
But that's obviously with having zero actual input from how bad Tony Romo's injury is. But I mean, if it's this questionable that he's going to play, though, it's got to be pretty significant.
The pain's got to be pretty significant.
And if we see
and the
him,
mobility.
If we see him,
lack thereof.
You know he's going to have the grimace on his face and be gutting it out the whole time. And he might not even make it through the game if they do try to roll him out. So
that's true, too. So that's something to keep an eye on. I feel bad shipping a game like the Brandon Whedon Cowboys versus the Jacksonville Jaguars across the pond. It's just not fair.
I will say this, though. I'm kind of disappointed now that this one's at noon and at prime time over there. I kind of dug the what they did with the Lions and Falcons a couple weeks ago, and
had a nice early game.
Had that early game.
That early game.
It's kind of fun, you know. Get up, have some breakfast, and watch some football, and it's live action stuff, and it's the only game going on at that time, and. Basically, it wrapped up by the time the other ones were getting ready to roll. So,
yep.
It was. I'd like to see them, maybe any of these London games that they're going to continue to do. I'd like to see them maybe lean that way more than the prime time that comes on at noon here. So, just a little editorial for me.
And let's close this little news round the league kind of chatter here. Let's talk about something positive about a quarterback. How about that? Let's talk Ben Roethlisberger. So week eight, throws 6 touchdowns. Steelers rout the Indianapolis Colts 51-34. Could it be done again? Well, at first it didn't seem like it could be done again against the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday night. Steelers really didn't have any points on the board. There was an entire drive that was Roethlisberger sacked, followed by Roethlisberger sacked, followed by Roethlisberger sacked. But the most amazing thing is that the pressure didn't bother him. He totally commanded the game from then on out. Threw 6 more touchdowns. What's that about? I don't know. But now Roethlisberger is the first quarterback in NFL history to throw 12 touchdowns in back-to-back weeks total. And then you add on to that the previous week where he had 522 passing yards, and he's the first quarterback to have two career 500-yard passing games, first one being in 2009. I'm telling you, this is shaping up to be an MVP-worthy season for Ben Roethlisberger.
It seems so crazy.
I mean, he's always been a capable quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, there's been some questions, especially as he's gotten older, about his accuracy and his deep passing and things like that. But this year, it's like a whole new, better Roethlisberger.
I mean, it's just, I'm just thinking, like, a couple weeks ago, they had lost to Tampa. They got smeared in Cleveland. You know, it wasn't long ago.
It seemed like they'd be lucky to get to 8-8 again.
It's like, is this team, you know, are they even going to contend for the division? Are they going to have a chance to go to the playoffs? Are they even going to get to 500, like you said?
Right.
I mean, those were all the questions we had just a couple weeks ago. And two just ridiculous performances. You know, obviously, he doesn't do it by himself. There's a lot of other people around him.
Of course, Antonio Brown, he's the best receiver in the league right now. And then Martavis Bryant.
And yeah, and that's the one thing I wanted to say is that I still see this as being sparked by the first touchdown that he caught. What was that? That was the week before the first big one.
That was his first game active on
the season. That was the first time we had seen life out of that offense in weeks.
Martavis Bryant has caught 5 touchdowns in 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And then that obviously loosens things up for AB.
Yes.
And he's been continuing to do what he's been doing and just being probably the best receiver in the league right now.
Well, I think the other thing that changed on top of bringing in Martavis Bryant and having him split snaps with Marcus Wheaton is that over these past 3 weeks, they've also gotten Le'Veon Bell more involved in the passing game. He mm-hmm. wasn't really getting a lot of targets.
They were just ramming him up.
They were just running him and very, very effectively.
Sure.
But now he's kind of taken on the Heath Miller role on the, you know, the middle of the field checkdown.
The third receiving target.
He's the
really.
Slot receiver. Mm-hmm. You know, they signed Lance Moore in the offseason. He's barely had much playing time because they don't really need him out there.
Right.
Because Le'Veon Bell's really capable of doing it all right now. He's got some of the best hands of a running back in the NFL at the moment. So you put all these together. You have Martavis Bryant coming out there scoring touchdowns. You have an increased use of Le'Veon Bell in the passing game. And all of a sudden, Roethlisberger is inarguably playing the very best football of his career. He's got a career high in completion percentage right now. He has, 22 touchdowns to 3 interceptions?
Mm-hmm.
He's the league's best passer under pressure. All 3 of those interceptions, he wasn't pressured. He's not throwing picks while under pressure. You know, you put all these things together, and you know, I don't want to, you know, draw away from some of the great seasons other quarterbacks are having, especially, you know, Tom Brady over about the past 5 weeks has been kind of neck and neck with what Roethlisberger's put together. But this really seems like the first true time in Roethlisberger's this is his 11th season, the first time that he's ever really been in the mix.
Yeah.
For MVP. I mean, I can't say that he's going to be throwing 6 touchdowns ever again this season. I can't in
but
a game.
But you can't say that he won't do
but
it next week.
I can't say that. They're up against the Jets. They don't have a secondary. You know, and I can't say that he's not going to throw for 500 yards again, but he might. But I don't – even if he doesn't throw 6 touchdowns in a game again this year, which he doesn't need to, or throw for 500 yards in a game again this year, which he doesn't need to. I don't see this as a fluke. I see this as him plateauing on a very high level right now, and I don't see it going down. I think he's really hit his stride, and this is a very important part of the season for a quarterback to hit his stride. So we all got to keep our eyes on the rest of Roethlisberger's season, because I've watched this guy play football since his first season, and I've never seen him look this dominant.
Yeah, it's just
and in control.
That's the funny part, especially now that it's happened 2 weeks in a row of that crazy a performance. But it was what I was thinking after the first time it happened was just like, this is this career guy who's, you know, he's got 2 rings. He's considered, I think he was widely considered up until 2 weeks ago, and maybe opinions have changed since then, or maybe not. I don't know, but at least up until about 2 weeks ago, I think he was widely considered like the worst of the best quarterbacks. He was among that top. And I don't want to get into, I don't want to use the E word or anything like
right,
that. I
right.
think that
Eli?
That, yeah, exactly. That nauseates me, that stuff. But regardless, like if you want to separate your quarterbacks around the league
out
into tranches.
Peyton Brady, Aaron Rodgers,
yeah, right.
Drew Brees.
So you got all these guys that are obvious franchise quarterbacks,
right,
that are prolific passers and, you know,
game
the fantasy
changers,
studs and all this stuff. And Roethlisberger was kind of on the tail end of that because it's kind of hard to argue that he is a franchise quarterback. Since his rookie year, he's been the starter there.
Yeah,
he's been solid.
He was rookie of the year his first season.
I think we talked about this the other night. He was kind of along for the ride on the first Super Bowl, but he was majorly responsible for the second one that he won.
Sure.
And he's been back to the Super Bowl since then. And, you know, he's should be considered among the better quarterbacks. But at the same time, he still wasn't considered the prolific quarterback.
No,
he wasn't
perfect. He has his own style.
He was known,
he's not standing back there in the pocket.
He was
like
known
Peyton
for
Manning
being
or
hard
Tom Brady
to tackle.
Just flash,
he was known for being a load to tackle,
yeah,
load
not,
to bring down.
He's not the laser guy.
He was the play extender and
sure,
let the play break down, and then you find an open guy running wild and free and heave it down there, and somehow he would make a, you know, off balance throw, and it would land on a dime on the guy's hands, and you know, he would make an amazing pass somehow in those situations. But again, it wasn't like stand back in the pocket and fire and
precise
pick apart a
laser
defense.
Darts.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. No.
But somehow, now he's got, like you said, the only guy to ever throw two 500-yard games, the only guy ever to throw 12 touchdowns in 2 weeks, six apiece. He's setting these records now.
These are things that Manning and Brady have never done.
And
for all of the great things and how great they are, and I'm never going to take any of that away from them, these are two accomplishments that you would think would have just happened at some point for Brady and or Manning, but they haven't. Or even Drew Brees, who, you know, has year after year of these incredible high yardage, high completion percentage seasons.
And nobody jump off a bridge here. We're not saying that we think he's better than Brady or Manning. But what this is this one, you got to credit Ben Roethlisberger for all this just because he's the one doing it.
Sure.
But two, you gotta give some credit to the weapons around him. AB has been just fantastic this year.
Like,
He was the lights out, all that, and he's been every bit as good, if not slightly better, in my mind. Mainly because, like, the cat's out of the bag after last year. Like, he should be getting the bulk of the defensive. Not even that he wasn't last year, but like even more than ever. The defense should have been keying on Antonio Brown because he was the playmaker that the Steelers had, still doing it.
The most amazing thing about him, too, is you can throw as many defenders on him as you want, and he is still going to catch
he's still gonna
five,
do it. He's
six
still
passes.
Do his thing.
He's going to score touchdowns.
Well, because he's not.
You can't cover him. You can't. He's like.
And plus, they get the ball to him in different ways where it's not like.
They're very creative.
It's not like he's just
him
on the outside and running a post route, and he's got to get separation from his defender or anything like that. They're throwing screens to him. They're crossing routes all the time. They get the ball to him any way they can, and that certainly helps. But it's a credit to him and some of these other guys that they're bringing along. You know, the kid Bryant
and Marcus Wheaton's been a
pleasant surprise over the last few weeks.
Over the past couple of weeks, and that's, I think what's really helped him is Martavis Bryant being
exactly
out there. He's splitting snaps. He's getting up to speed. Both of them very slowly. They have package plays for these receivers, but the package plays are working.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fascinating to see this transformation of the Steelers offense and how Roethlisberger has really, you know, been the architect. You know, and as far as I'm concerned right now, if we're breaking down MVP to two players, it's between Roethlisberger and Tom Brady right now.
And last but not least, I do want to mention one of the I don't even know if the Steelers fans might even not like me saying this, but you got to bring Todd Haley's name into the conversation.
Sure, sure.
They were at odds. He and Ben were at odds when he came aboard. And
things have gotten better.
Things seemed weird.
Time.
It seems like he was trying to shoehorn Ben into his sort of offense and all that. But I think what they've done is just found a real a good way to mesh and to make it work. Take the good things out of Haley's system.
Yeah, the ball control and the
and
not
the short
turning it over
and
the short passing.
Yeah, things like that. And
rely
then
on yards after the catch.
But then make it work with Ben's strengths and the strengths of the team. And,
sure.
And so you got to give some credit to Todd Haley as well. They're definitely, you know, they looked lifeless. They looked lifeless
a couple
weeks ago.
It looked like bad things were going to happen.
Somehow, even lifeless, as lifeless as they looked, you know, Antonio Brown has continued to have a solid season, like every week in, week out, you know. And I think Roethlisberger, you know, he's had a couple down games, but sure. he's still been pretty decent throughout the season.
You can't argue against 22 touchdowns to 3 interceptions through nine weeks, you know.
But that's what I'm saying.
It's huge.
Take out the last 2 weeks, and it's only 10. And
but that's still only 3 interceptions.
Right. True. He's definitely been good at keeping control of the ball. So, yeah, it's really fascinating to see what's going on in Pittsburgh, and I'm really interested just to see where they go with this. And you know, are we going to see them again? I think it's probably foolish to expect continual results of 500 yard games and 6 touchdowns a week and things like that. But just, you know, are we going to see this, you know, just crazy good offensive team continue, you know, for the rest of the season? And obviously that's definitely helped the defense out too, because you can see the defense has played better in the last few weeks.
Oh
too.
My gosh, James Harrison has 4 sacks in the last 2 games. James ageless Harrison.
It's hard
all
not
of a sudden.
To. I mean, it's hard not to if you're, you know, your offense is playing so well and it's taking so much pressure off your defense, and then the other team is playing from behind.
Playing from behind and pressing. Exactly. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, especially with every team in the AFC North still over 500.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about those teams and all the other ones right after the break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast when we make our Week 10 Minute Picks.
Minute Picks.
So stay tuned.
Your smile is like a breath of spring. Your voice is soft like summer rain. And I cannot compete with you, Jolene.
And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And it is time for our Week 10 Minute Picks.
Yes.
We're going to pick all of the, make our picks for all of the games for Week 10. Of course, not including games involving Indianapolis, Minnesota, New England, San Diego, Washington, and Houston. All of whom are on bye this week. We start, of course, on Thursday night with an AFC North matchup. The Cleveland Browns are at the Cincinnati Bengals. As we all know, every team in the AFC North has a winning record right now. I am going to go with Cleveland Browns on the road upset. The Browns don't win divisional games on the road, okay? They don't win primetime games on the road, okay? But this is Thursday night, and I think weird things are going to happen, especially with the Bengals being without Vontaze Burfict and cornerback Leon Hall. Everybody keeps talking about how you can run on the Browns, but you can run on the Bengals just as well. And I think the Browns will take advantage of their three-headed rushing attack, finally, and get some good passes down the field and play action and get the win. I am going with the Browns.
Big call on your part.
Oh, bold.
I don't know. I'm inclined to agree with you in that I like Hoyer in that I think that he's a good clutch quarterback. We've seen some comebacks. We've seen good play out of him in big games, and that's why I think the Browns, plus some of the other reasons you mentioned, I think they have a real good shot in this game. I think that he's going to play well under the lights.
The Cleveland defense is playing really well now, too. They're getting a lot better.
In a huge situation, absolutely. And I don't know if I'm ready to pull the trigger on saying that they're going to win, but I think it should be a good game, a really good game. I'm gonna go with the Bengals pulling it out just because they're at home in this situation. But I certainly wouldn't be surprised if you were right.
Next up on Sunday, Kansas City at the Buffalo Bills. I'm going with the Buffalo Bills because I just found this to be kind of a difficult game to pick. So I decided to go with the home team. But there is one big thing worth considering, and that is that Sammy Watkins left practice today tweaking his groin again.
Ooh.
So keeping an eye on Sammy Watkins' status for Sunday is going to be very important. Obviously, you know, Watkins is uncoverable. It's going to be amazing to see him with better quarterbacks and more experience in the next couple of years. Without Watkins, I don't really like Buffalo, but since that's the initial pick that I made, I'm going with the Bills.
Yeah, I think that Buffalo, it's obviously, if Watkins is out, it's going to be a much taller task for him. I think Kansas City's playing some pretty good ball right now, probably playing about as well as they can. But it's a tough task to go on the road in the NFL. And the Bills, I don't think they're necessarily a joke, certainly not at home. So I think I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with the Bills and say they pull this one out, I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas City somehow got a win. But I think I like the Bills here mainly because they're at home.
There is the Sammy Watkins caveat to
true,
be considered.
Very true.
Next up,
I'm assuming he's playing as well.
Sure. Next up, Miami Dolphins at the Detroit Lions. Miami playing really good football right now. Ryan Tannehill is looking pretty sharp. The defense cannot be ignored. But I'm going to go with the Detroit Lions. I think, you know, if Detroit was going to Miami in this instance, I think that the Dolphins would get this win. I think going up to Detroit, Lions are coming off of the bye. Calvin Johnson is healthy. He says he feels you know, the best that he's felt all season long because he's been battling that ankle sprain for quite a while. You know, if we're getting a close to 100% Calvin Johnson here with the Lions at home, I do like Detroit.
Not only that, Calvin supposedly is saying that this is as healthy as he's felt, this as refreshed as he's felt this late in the season, which is obvious, makes obvious sense because
he's had a couple weeks off.
And even when the last couple times he's played, he didn't have much of a role. It was more of a decoy than anything, even though he did get a little dinged up in those games. This is obviously the this is going to be if he's back and he's feeling full strength. You know, I think that the better days are ahead for the Lions, and that's tough to even say considering they're 6-2 right now. So
sure,
I'm going to go with the Lions at home here.
Next up, Dallas Cowboys at the Jacksonville Jaguars, of course, in London. I'm going with the Jacksonville Jaguars here. You know, we talked a little bit about this earlier in terms of the Tony Romo injury and the potential for Brandon Whedon to get the start. If Brandon Whedon gets the start, I'm 100% about Jacksonville. If Tony Romo gets the start, I'm not as committed to a Jacksonville win. However, again, whatever kind of, you know, limited mobility and pain and things that Romo might be in this game could still kind of doom the Cowboys. But I'm going with the assumption that Whedon is going to start. And in that case, I'm going with the Jacksonville Jaguars. That defense is really quite strong, especially against a quarterback like him.
Yeah, I mean, I think a full-strength Romo probably leads an overall better team than the Jaguars.
Sure.
But given the situation and given how Jacksonville's played the last couple weeks, Their defense has really been turning it on.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to allow a lot of rushing for DeMarco Murray here.
And that's going to really force the Cowboys to, you know, use their passing attack. And it's hard to say what kind of passing attack that's going to be if it's Whedon or a suboptimal Romo, if you will. So,
I mean, Brandon Whedon couldn't get the ball to Dez Bryant until a garbage time touchdown last week. How can you, as an NFL quarterback, not throw accurately enough for a guy who makes circus catches on the regular, like Dez Bryant, to catch? Then you're terrible. Goodbye.
And another quick point that I like, another reason why I like Jacksonville here is I think they found something that they like in Denard, and
sure,
he's been running really well, and I think it's been a pleasant surprise for a lot of people, especially the Jaguars, because I don't know that they expected him to play quite this well. And they obviously weren't able to get anything going right in their running game
with Gerhardt
prior to that. Yeah, exactly. So
next up, San Francisco 49ers are at the New Orleans Saints. San Francisco 49ers, that offense to me just seems kind of like it's just a mess. You know, Frank Gore just isn't what he used to be. Carlos Hyde, obviously, you know, he can fill those shoes. No more Marcus Lattimore, of course, he retired. And that's pretty disappointing. New Orleans, you know, they aren't the same as they used to be in terms of being dominant at home, but they still, you know, win at home more often than not. I'm going to go with the Saints here.
The Saints should definitely play a better game. This is a big, you know, the Niners are still a high-profile opponent for them. Like you said, they're at home, and they play their better game at home. Having a hard time here just because the Niners are, and it's mainly because the Niners are a really tough team to figure out. You've seen them play well on the road. I don't have an issue picking the Niners in a road game. It's just I'm not sure what Niners we're going to get. And they're kind of a dysfunctional mess right now. That being said, I think that they're going to pull this out. And it's just
That's bold.
It's more of a gut feeling than anything.
Next up, Tennessee Titans are at the Baltimore Ravens. Tennessee Titans, not a very good team. They don't really have a lot on offense, especially in the passing game. I don't think they'll be carving up Baltimore secondary quite like the Pittsburgh Steelers did on Sunday night. Also, Baltimore's at home. They're not in a good mood. They're still in the hunt to win the AFC North, even though they dropped to last place with the loss. It's not a crazy, insurmountable last place situation that they're in. Good luck, Tennessee. I think Baltimore is going to have a great day.
Yeah, I think that's hard to argue with. I mean, Tennessee's shown a decent ability to play some pretty good defense this year. But other than that, there's not a whole lot to feel excited about watching that team. And this is just not a great situation for them to try and pull this win out, especially in Baltimore, especially coming off I don't want to say embarrassment, but it was almost an embarrassment that they went through Sunday night. And
I think any Ravens player would tell you it was embarrassing.
I'm sure the Ravens players feel like they were embarrassed. So I like them pretty well to get back in this game.
Pittsburgh Steelers are at the New York Jets. That is not the kind of Steelers at Jets that we have seen years ago when the Jets were AFC North contender or AFC contenders for the AFC Championship and all of those vaunted Jets defenses taking on the Steelers. The Steelers are going to win this game. Obviously, it's harder to win on the road, but the New York Jets, they don't have much of a secondary to speak of. I don't feel very good about the quarterback situation, no matter if it's Michael Vick or Geno Smith or Matt Sims. I don't care. The Pittsburgh Steelers, this might be the last best moment for Roethlisberger to throw another 6 touchdowns in a game, to be honest. I don't know if it happens, but I wouldn't be surprised if it gets to 5. I'm going with the Steelers.
The Steelers are playing really well right now. It's kind of, we just went through a long discussion of that in the last segment, and it's kind of hard to pick against them, especially in this situation, considering the team that they're going to be playing. Now, granted, they're on the road, and this is just one of those things where there's not really a good reason to think that the Jets are going to win unless you're one of those, you know, NFL chaos theory type people that, you know, whatever can happen whenever, which is true. It's definitely true, and
sure,
we've seen it in the past. I just don't know. I don't think that that's going to happen this weekend. I like the Steelers in this situation.
The final 1 o'clock Central, noon Eastern game, Atlanta Falcons coming off of their bye at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I've said week after week that Tampa Bay, to me, is the worst team in the league. That doesn't really change just because Josh McCown is at quarterback. But that being said, I am going with the Buccaneers to win this game. And you want to know why? Because Atlanta is garbage on the road. And I am not going to trust Atlanta on the road in Tampa Bay in a divisional matchup, regardless of how much better the Atlanta roster looks on paper versus Tampa Bay's. I can't trust Atlanta on the road until they give me a reason to think otherwise. Tampa Bay's winning this game.
I don't know. Can I pick a tie?
If you want. They happen.
I'm not feeling either team here. I mean, you lay out a strong point to pick against Atlanta here. But God, what do we see that makes us think that Tampa's going to be able to win, especially
I don't know, they
making
beat
this
Pittsburgh and
making this desperation sort of move to put McCown back in instead of Glennon. I'm going to take Atlanta. I don't know why. I don't feel strongly about it at all, obviously.
In the late afternoon slate of games, we start with Denver Broncos at the Oakland Raiders. Denver got manhandled by the New England Patriots last week, whereas Oakland found themselves in a similar situation as they are in this week, except last week they were actually in Seattle. This time they get to be beaten by a dominant team at the comforts of home. The Denver Broncos are going to win this game, but I think that this game is going to also present some good opportunities for Derek Carr and that passing game. I think there could be some elements of a shootout to this, but Derek Carr is no Peyton Manning. I am going with the Broncos.
I don't know. I think Carr might have some stats by the time the game's done, but I'm betting a lot of that comes at the end.
Sure.
After they're down. I just have a hard time thinking that Denver's going to lose this game coming off of again, I don't know if that was an embarrassing loss.
It was a big loss.
It was a big loss just because it was a big game. It was obviously the highest attention game of the week from everybody's perspective, and they got beat pretty good. And you know, Peyton doesn't take those things lightly. And so I have a hard time thinking that the Raiders have much of a chance in this outside of the fact that they're at home. But I'm going with the Broncos.
St. Louis Rams at the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona Cardinals, of course, by record, of course, have the – are the best team in football right now. And they and not even by record, but objectively, you could also say those are the best team in football. They've got a lot going for them, offense, defense, passing, running. And so the best team in football should be able to win a divisional matchup at home against a team like the St. Louis Rams, and I think that they do. I'm going with the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, the Rams, they've been surprising at times. They have a win over Seattle and San Francisco at this point. You've seen some things out of them, you know.
Oh, there's been a lot of good things out of them.
Couple good things, certainly.
Oh, lots of good things.
And
you only have one loss because you're not for a fluke at this point in the
year.
Right.
So, but yeah, this being in Arizona, I think it's probably a bit too tall a task for them. I like them to maybe be competitive and keep the game interesting, certainly. But I think it's hard to pick them in this game, so I'm going with the Cardinals.
New York Giants are at the Seattle Seahawks. We just watched the New York Giants lose at the hands of Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. I don't think that they're going to go into Seattle and fare much better. This might be the return of Interception Eli. That wouldn't surprise me one bit. It's hard for me to find a reason why Seattle wouldn't win this game unless somehow they have a complete failure on offense, not on defense, but on offense. So I'm going with Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, Seattle is motivated in this game for the fact that they're trying to get back in that discussion for being the best team. I'm thinking they're feeling slighted at this point because everybody wants to talk about other teams like Arizona and Denver and
That's what they deserve. They haven't been winning all anticipated.
No,
you're
absolutely right. But that's what I'm saying is I think that they're using that as motivation. To try and get things turned around for themselves and get back on the path that they saw themselves taking at the beginning of the season. So this is just terrible timing for the Giants. I mean, coming off a big loss at home, to have to go on the road and play Seattle there. So I like Seattle.
Sunday Night Football.
On NBC.
On NBC.
Who is Alan Chris going to be describing? Owl.
Owl. Chicago Bears at the Green Bay Packers. If there's a team on the hunt for a bit of redemption, it would be the Chicago Bears. A lot of reports coming out about, you know, dissatisfaction amongst players with head coach Mark Trestman. Obviously, you know, we've seen Bears players show a lot of frustration with the way the season has gone. Unfortunately, I don't think this is going to be a moment of redemption for them. I think they're going to be up for this game. I think it's going to be a pretty physical game. It's division, it's national, it's Green Bay. There's a lot of bragging rights at stake there for the Bears, but I just don't see them going into Green Bay this Sunday night and being able to get that win.
And I really want to pick the Bears here. And there's no good reason. They're
except for maybe they are a little bit more motivated.
That's the main reason why I think that they could potentially pull it off is that, you know, they've been underperforming, and I don't think anybody can deny that.
Especially considering you look at that talent level and you figure there should be more wins on the board.
They've been in the crosshairs here throughout their bye week last week, mm-hmm. and just everybody's talking about how bad the situation is, what a mess Trestman's got on his hands. All that, and I feel like one of those things coming on where everybody talks negatively about a team for long enough that they show up and win a game that they shouldn't. And this is certainly a game that they shouldn't. I know that Cutler's got a terrible record up in Lambeau. All logic points to the Packers. And I'm basically making this pick knowing that there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to get it wrong. But I'm going to go with the Bears. Why not?
Okay.
I like the backup against the wall thing.
And finally, Monday Night Football, the Carolina Panthers travel to Philadelphia to take on the Mark Sanchez-led Philadelphia Eagles. I'm going with the Eagles here. I like the Eagles here, Foles, Sanchez. I just really like it. Carolina, their offense has gotten pretty strong. Obviously, they're starting to get their injured running backs back. Cam Newton's healthy. But I just don't trust Carolina's defense anymore. It's not like how it was last year. And you have to have a defense playing really solid, consistent defense to contain all of these weapons on this Eagles offense. So I don't think they have the capability of doing that. And so I'm going with the home team, going with the Eagles.
I agree that, Carolina's been playing better. They've gotten things rolling a little bit better for themselves over the last week or two, but they've been a hit or miss sort of team this year, and like you said, the defense is a big part of that. There's a lot of questions on Philadelphia's side, though. I mean, they've had a rough time running the ball all season. I think they're getting a little bit better at it over the last 3-4 weeks. I think that we'll probably see a continuation of that. But then there's the big question of how Sanchez is going to work out. I think this is a pretty interesting game, and I think that maybe we'll even see a good competitive match here, which might, you know, has been kind of rare, I guess, for some of the Monday night games. But I like the Eagles here. I wouldn't be surprised to see Carolina keep it interesting, but I think I like the Eagles in this situation.
Well, that wraps up our Week 10 Minute Picks here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. So,
awesome.
So that happened. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to send you all home. So stay tuned. Again, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
You could have your choice of men, but I could never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you and whatever you decide to do, Jolene.
We're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and before we let you go, as is customary here around these parts, it's time to read some football facts from the book of football facts that I bought for a dollar.
Factlings.
Little factlings. Again, contact either of us on Twitter at FBall_Andrea or at BFAT65 if any of these prove to be incorrect, and we'll acknowledge your contribution to fact checking.
Or if you want to, or if you want to correct how we're pronouncing people's names.
Oh yeah, if you want to correct our pronunciations, we will also accept that. So without further ado, while Brian is choking on his own laughter,
sorry.
Here are five football facts. Facts in quotes. Steve McNair passed for 3,387 yards and 22 touchdowns playing quarterback for the Tennessee Titans during the 2002 NFL season.
Okay.
Deuce McAllister scored the most touchdowns for the New Orleans Saints football squad. Ooh, squad. In 2002. McAllister totaled 18 touchdowns for the Saints. Quarterback Michael Vick of the Atlanta Falcons rushed for 777 yards in 2002.
Okay, we're stuck in 2002.
Oh, well, we're going to move forward. Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Tommy Maddox passed for 473 yards and 4 touchdowns against the Atlanta Falcons on November 10th, 2002.
Oh, wow. Big performance from
Tommy. Big performance from Tommy Maddox. Wow, he could have had his first 500-yard game.
Of XFL fame.
And finally, quarterback Carson Palmer of USC was the top NFL draft pick in 2003. Palmer was selected by the Cincinnati Bengals.
Was this book written in like 04 or something like that?
You know what? No, I don't think so.
Because they were stuck in that 02, 03.
No, they're going. There's a whole bunch of chronological stats there. They're going into 04 on the next page.
Okay.
This is from 2005.
Okay, all right. So we have a 10-year-old fact book.
Yes, this 10-year-old fact book. So you're not going to get anything after 2005 in this book. We're probably post-2004.
What I like is that these are just football facts. They're not guaranteeing that any of them are interesting.
That's true,
they're
too.
They're just facts.
Yeah, they're actually...
And that's if they're facts.
I've gone through a lot of this book, and I have to say, ooh, that's interesting, didn't really cross my mind very often when going through it.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, those are our five football facts for this week.
We hope that you enjoyed that.
Yeah, we hope you enjoyed it. We hope you enjoyed the entire Week 10 2014 edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast this week. I'm your host here at the F-Ball Podcast, Andrea Hengst. I am the AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can find my work at BleacherReport.com through the TeamStream app. You can just Google me. You know, I exist. I also have a Facebook page with all of my stuff on it, too, so you can search me out on Facebook, Andrea Hengst, NFL columnist, and you can get all my columns in one handy-dandy spot there, as well as the podcast. I also write a Deep League Gem waiver wire column for Pro Football Focus Fantasy. You have to sign up for PFF Fantasy Gold to access that article, but I highly recommend it. I got to say, I'm pretty good at this at hitting on these deep league gems every week. So you could really be helping your team out on the waiver wire with my assistance. And then, of course, you can find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea, FBALL_Andrea.
And, of course, I'm Brian. You can call me Brian, or B, if you like. And I am the producer of this podcast and also the co-host of this podcast. And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, that wraps up this week's edition of the F-Ball NFL podcast. Again, thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back next week, of course, talking more about the old footballs. And until then, enjoy all of the games. May all of your teams win and all of your enemies lose.
That would be ideal.
That's basically what everybody's out for in life, right? Winning and their enemies losing. So I wish all of you listeners the best this week. Enjoy the games, and we'll be back next Wednesday for another edition of the absolutely excellent F-Ball NFL podcast.
Later.
Peace. Jolene.